come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What are we getting on the punt? Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
We're here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino with you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter if you want to talk to us that way. Draft, Giants, NFL, you name it, for the next 1 hour as we get ready for the Giants in 2015. We'll have two quick guest spots today, just a couple players from each school to talk about, so we're not going to spend a lot of time with them, but 5-10 minutes, give or take. We have Sam McEwen from the World Herald on the prospects coming out of Nebraska, Randy Gregory, Amir Abdullah, two of the big guys from there, and then we will have Jeff Greer from the Courier Journal, on Devontae Parker, the wide receiver out of Louisville, coming your way at 12:30. So we'll have those two guests today. Otherwise, there'll be a lot of your calls talking about what the Giants should do in the NFL draft at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Paul, good morning.
Hey, John.
How you doing?
I tell you, a beautiful day here in New York City, and man, did we need one after what we had all winter. We got a couple in a row. This is like amazing to me. We had two good days in a row.
Did you get your full five in this morning?
Two.
Only two, huh?
I had too much going on this morning. Errands to do, only 2 miles this morning. But I'm going to try to get two more in this afternoon before I go for do some more stuff.
All right, that works.
Hey, got to do it.
Not a whole lot going on in terms of the draft. Not a lot of news or buzz since the show yesterday, Paul. Still talking about maybe that number two pick getting moved to San Diego.
Right.
Which, and really to me, what that's going to come down to is that San Diego is going to go to Phillip Rivers and say, Phil, if we move to Los Angeles, are you going to re-sign with us? And I'm sure he'll give him a definitive yes or no. And right now, if reports are to believe, the answer is going to be no. And if that's the case, as painful as might be, if he's not going to go back with them, they might have to make that trade.
Well, I wonder if it's also not a financial thing too, John. Because remember, him and Eli and Ben are all in that same class. And Ben has already set the bar with the kind of numbers that he's getting.
5 for 100, give or take.
That's pretty good money.
That's what a top quarterback's making
these
days.
Now, Phillip Rivers, of course, doesn't have the two rings that the other two guys have. So let's not forget that. But I think the Chargers not only have to understand if Rivers is going to be willing to relocate, they need to understand what kind of numbers he's going to be talking about. And I'm sure they're thinking he doesn't have two rings. He probably should not be quite in the same neighborhood as the other guys, although Eli's not re-signed yet. And I wouldn't blame them for feeling that way. But I think that's part of this discussion. I wouldn't be surprised.
No doubt about it. 201-939-4513. Randy Gregory tweeted some stuff out that I think people in New Orleans wasn't a big fan of yesterday. I believe the quote was, not sure why people make such a big deal about this town. I haven't seen much to impress me. It was something like that.
Based on what happened the last couple of weeks, is he the most intelligent prospect in the draft?
Well, here's the thing. I figured you would like that because you also dislike New Orleans.
New Orleans, not my favorite town. No, not at all. But I will say this. You know, the one thing you want to do as a prospect when you're going on these visits is to do everything you can to endear yourself to those people before you go. You get drafted.
That's
there.
True. And by the way, Mel Kiper in his most recent optimal draft for each team. He basically takes the role of general manager for each team,
right,
and takes a player. He actually has Randy Gregory going to New Orleans in that draft, so I thought that was very interesting. And speaking of which, let's get right to it. We're joined by Sam McEwen. Sam, hope I got the last name pronounced right, from the World Herald out there in Nebraska. Sam, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and you nailed the name. Good job, man.
I appreciate it. No problem. Well, you know what? Let's talk about Gregory a little bit, Sam. You know, we had the positive test at the combine. We have some of the stuff that came out about the New Orleans stuff yesterday on Twitter. Are you surprised by a lot of this stuff, or did you sense some of the immaturity issues from Gregory when he was with Nebraska?
Well, I mean, we knew that there were, you know, it's interesting. You know, here's the thing with Randy. Randy's a very, very smart guy. He doesn't necessarily come off that way, but he is. He understands,
okay.
He understands the game of football. He understands the game. He's a smart guy. I think he battles what some prospects battle, and that's ambivalence. I think there is a sense of, I think he's always kind of known that he was better at football than a lot of people, but I think he has always maybe wondered if that's what he really, you know, if he loves it, loves it. And I think over the last 2 or 3 months, he's kind of tried to say, this is what I really want to do for a living, and this is what I want to be. And I think that's good. I think that's good. But we're talking about a kid who coming out of high school, and I'm telling you again, he's very smart, doesn't academically qualify for Purdue, and he should have, and seriously considered playing college basketball at the MAC, in the MAC. For like Akron or Miami of Ohio. Like that was seriously in his mind. Chose junior college based on the fact that it had a good meal plan. Left the junior college early and went back home and lived with his parents in Ann Arbor, Michigan, incidentally, because they had moved to Ann Arbor because they lived in Indianapolis and moved up there. And his dad's like an executive. Lived in their basement for 6 months, worked out, ate right, did really well, then showed up at Nebraska in 2013 in perfect condition and really had an excellent 4 or 5 months of football. And, you know, that first year he was in elite shape and he did really well. And then I think he had a hard offseason. I don't think there's any question about that. I think there was some sense that maybe he should have left after that very first year. And he didn't. He decided to come back. I think there, again, was that ambivalence. And then I think he had a hard year in 2014 on a lot of different fronts. He got hurt. He had the 2 positive tests. You know, I don't know that he always loved living in Nebraska. His defensive line coach was a tough guy to please, if we're going to be honest. That guy is a tough guy to please. And a lot of the players here, kind of had a love-hate relationship with him.
Interesting.
And so I think he wore on people. Doesn't mean he wasn't a good coach, because there's a lot of coaches in this world who are tough guys to please. Now, he's had that particular coach has had some off the field trouble too in recent weeks. But so I think there's just some issues there that have to be worked out. If you sit in front of Randy and you talk to him, you become aware right away of 2 things. A, he's really smart, and B, He kind of knows what you're going to ask him. So it didn't surprise me that he went to the combine and he preempted all of their questions by talking to them about it. Like, it doesn't surprise me that he would do that. I think he's, you know, and then that way he's kind of he's tricky smart, you know, like you don't always sense it with him. So he got really sort of tired of interviews last year because he knew we were going to ask about the NFL. And he'd say, I don't want to talk about that, man. And he just kind of walk away. Like, he's an interesting guy, very gifted, very athletically gifted, and smarter than people think, even though he's made a lot of mistakes off the field.
All right, let me ask you something a little bit off the map then, because we know what he did at the combine. We know what his stats are playing at Nebraska. So let me go into what you're talking about, him as a person, because it sounds like he's got a very specific personality type. And depending upon where he goes and what the media market is and what the pressure is in that particular situation.
And what the coaches are like.
Because you know what? When you get paid to play ball in the NFL, you got to put up with whatever guff the coaches give you. All right? This is not college we're talking about now. This is your job. Give me a sense of that dynamic. Is that a concern as to where he lands?
I don't know that it's – I mean, I think he can manage a lot of different kinds of coaches. I think that there's definitely a, you know, he can be a very engaging interview. I mean, that's very possible. I've had good conversations with him. It's just, I think at Nebraska, which is a unique place in terms of, it's a very similar to a pro media market, because Nebraska is the kind of like the pro team in the state of Nebraska. So whereas you probably have 40 reporters at Giants practice, there's about 40 at Nebraska's practice. So it's very similar in terms of intensity and interest. And I think over time, players just aren't quite used to that. And they don't have media. They don't have agents and media handlers and things like that. So I think at times that can get a little overwhelming. And, of course, Randy played at Nebraska in what could be considered 2 very tumultuous years inside the program. This was not like the salad days of Bo Pelini. This was 2 years in which the coach was on the
hot seat.
Basically, from the minute he started, you know, in 2013, the minute the tape comes out in 2013, he's on the hot seat.
So Randy's staff, everybody was under a lot of stress. And so I think it was just not the best environment. It wasn't a real great place to work with it, which is why, for example, another one of Nebraska's NFL draft prospects, Amir Bula, is such an impressive human being because he handled that stuff extremely well. Mm. A lot of the players in Nebraska didn't handle the last two seasons that well because they didn't know how to handle it. Like it was so odd and toxic and weird. So I don't think Randy was all that uncommon in that regard, but I think he's a heck of a prospect. I mean, I mean that. People will be impressed with his football knowledge. Like he does understand the game at a really high level, and he would not have a problem with playing linebacker. Like he's not one of these guys that's just like see quarterback, go tackle quarterback. He understands each level of the field, so he has some pretty good instincts in that regard, and I think he could play a variety of positions.
Very interesting. Well, you know what? Let's move over to Amir Abdullah. You mentioned him. He's probably, you know, around 3 to 6 in terms of where generally people are generally ranking the running backs in this year's draft. He's a smaller guy, but I know he runs with more power than people might think. What are some of your observations about Abdullah and your thoughts on his strengths and weaknesses heading into the NFL draft?
On the field, he's built like a little rock. I mean, if you look at him and you meet him, he's like a little rock. He's 5'8", and he's 205, and there's, I don't know, he's 3% body fat. I mean, he's like a rock. And a very impressive human being. You come away from meeting him understanding why he has the leadership qualities that he does. Comes from a very big and very competitive family. They pushed him. He's the youngest of that family. He's got a good personality. He's kind of private, but he can be funny, and so there's a lot of qualities there that NFL coaches are going to absolutely love.
How much stock are you putting in his knee issue from this past year? Is that something that's going to linger? Is that something that NFL coaches are going to be concerned about?
I don't think that will be an issue. I think that generally speaking, that was the only injury that he had of any real note. He had kind of a foot thing his junior year, but he recovered from that. And beyond that, he did not actually miss a game because he missed the end. He missed the last three quarters of the game against Purdue, and Nebraska had a bye week. Then he came back, and he played the rest of the games that season. And so I think Amir will be healthy. If you're looking for a guy who's really, really good in space, that would be him. So he's very good at the jump hop, so to speak, the jump cut. That's one of his specialties. And then he's very good at being able to catch a ball and turn in one fluid motion. So he doesn't have to square his shoulders. That he doesn't have to do all that because his body is such that he's just able to catch and turn, and he's squared up. And that's going to be a real gift to him in the league. And then, he's not easy to tackle. He just, like I said, he's built like a little rock. So, like, you have to get low because he can get low. And then once you get low, you've got to tackle some really big legs. So I think he's a very good fit for the NFL. Now, some teams prefer the big 6'1", 215-pound guy. And in this draft, there's 3 or 4 of those who I think are really, really good, like Tevin Coleman, and David Johnson, and, of course, Todd Gurley. But if you like the smaller guy, then he's your guy. And his one weakness is fumbling. He does have an issue. He's had an issue in his sophomore and junior years with fumbling the ball, especially around the goal line.
That's got to be fixed. John's pointing out to me some numbers that make me very concerned because my favorite third-day Nebraska pick is wide receiver Kenny Bell. And as John has pointed out to me, he's had some impressive workouts. He had a good combine. And, I like this guy, quite frankly, as an NFL player who I think is going to do a lot of great things out of the slot for some team. I look at him as a slot guy. I'm curious as to a couple of thoughts you might have on him.
Yeah, there's that. Incidentally, when Kenny arrived on campus, which was in 2010, the guy that he worked against every single day in practice during his redshirt year was Prince of Mbabara. So
didn't even think about that.
Well, it's interesting because we'd always do these stories right after the redshirt year. And we went to, you know, all the defensive players and said, who really impressed you? Kenny was the guy that impressed Prince. So these two guys worked against each other for a whole year before Prince graduated. Kenny stretches the field. He's fast. He has okay hands, not great hands. He drops passes that he shouldn't. That said, he's really good at playing deep balls. So the passes that he tends to drop are not the ones down the field, but the ones, the 9-yard slant, you know, that kind of thing. And he's a better blocker than his build would suggest. And, you know, he's got quite the personality. I mean, that guy is rare. I mean, he's, and I know I've said that about all three of these guys, but I'm telling you that Kenny is, you know, sort of out on the far edge of, you know, he'll be in media one day. I've said that to him. He doesn't think he will, but he will. He'll be in the media one day. And Kenny's fast. I mean, his best calling card is speed. And his dad played in the NFL as a kick returner. I think Kenny can be a kick returner. I don't think he can be a punt returner. But I do think he can be a kick returner. He's fast, and that helps.
Tim, Sam, excuse me. Sorry about that. We appreciate the time, my friend.
Cool.
And that's great information. We actually learned a lot about all three of those guys that I didn't know before this interview started. And that's why we do these. Great information. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you down the road. All right, Sam?
All right. Take care. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you, bud. That's Sam McEwen from the World Herald, covers Nebraska. Good stuff there.
I never even thought of the Kenny Bell and Prince Amukamara connection. That is really good. And you know, the Giants have done their homework. Look, I think this. The Giants' depth chart at wide receiver, due to the nature of Cruz's injury and due to the fact that, you know, Reuben Randall has yet to fulfill his full potential as a consistent guy. John, we've talked about this. It would not be out of the realm of possibility that at some point during this draft, the Giants do get another receiver.
I don't disagree. And I think the one interesting thing I took, and I will get to your calls. I know you're holding in just a second. Then we'll get our next guest at 12:30, so we'll take calls between now and then. We'll try to knock out everybody that's on the line. Randy Gregory, to me, the way he described him,
right?
He's one of those kids that's almost, and again, this is just me judging by what Sam told us,
right?
That he's almost too smart for his own good. Where, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where
I think I get. I think I know where you're going.
His focus isn't completely on football. You know, he'll think about other things. His mind will wander. And he's intelligent. He's smart. But a lot of times his actions don't portray that because he's not focused on what he's supposed to do with one singular focus all the time. And the one thing I took out of that, which is interesting, is that he thinks he can convert to be a linebacker in the NFL, which I thought was very interesting. Now, if, and this is the judgment NFL teams, including the Giants, are going to have to make, and this is going to be, I think, what's going to determine where Randy Gregory goes in this draft, can a team and the coach for that particular team get him to commit 100% at football, grow up, be an adult about it, treat it like a job? Because to me, based on everything I've read and heard about him, and Sam really reinforced that, if you can get him to do that, he could be a Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of player in the NFL. If you can get him to do that, that's a red flag. Can you? We'll have to wait and find out.
Yeah. I'm interested, and, you know, really you're going to have to talk more to him than the writer, but when he talks about converting to linebacker, big difference between a 4-3 backer and a 3-4 backer.
Well, remember, he did say he can read, you know, different roles on different levels.
He
that
did.
Tells me he can work in coverage if he has to.
And that's what makes me curious right now. I mean, we talked about him about a month ago. And what did I say to you? I said, John, if I can be convinced that he can play outside linebacker in a 4-3,
you have him with
then I would consider him.
You have him kind of like with Vic Beasley in that area. If you think he can convert, then you're down.
And that projection is a very, very hard one to make.
It's extremely hard because you're asking him to do something he hasn't been asked to do before.
Right.
So it's very hard to judge that. And obviously the Giant scouts and general manager and coaches, they're more trained to make those sorts of judgments than we are. And they're going to have to figure that out when they come up at number 9 on draft day and say he was on the board. But there's a good chance Randy Gregory will be there when the Giants pick at number 9. 201-939-4513. We got three calls. We'll try to get all three in before we get to our next guest at 12:30. Let's go to Eshawn. I'm sorry. He's in Queens. What's going on, Eshawn?
Yes, John Smith. How you doing?
What's going on, Eshawn? How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing good, man. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, with Chucky Brown going into the safety position, how do you feel about that?
Well, here's the thing about Chucky Brown. He played for Steve Spagnuolo in Baltimore. So you have to figure that between his time with the Giants here last year and then his time in Baltimore, between Spagnuolo and the Giants, they have a pretty good feel for what he's capable of doing. And I think the one thing that's held Chucky Brown back in the past, he doesn't have that top-end speed that maybe some other corners do. He has played inside before as well. And when you play the slot, do you know what that means? You're going to have to tackle and run support. So you seem to have some of those skills that could translate to safety. Whether or not he can do it full-time, you know, do things like read routes and, you know, make adjustments to balls in the air and, you know, do take all the right angles and run support consistently and stay healthy and do that, it remains to be seen. But Tom Coughlin thinks he's the skill set, and if Tom believes it, I think the Giants will give him a shot, and I think he's a pretty good chance of succeeding.
I mean, honestly, he showed some light at the end of last year. I mean, I actually like the guy, you know. He plays very rough. But also, how do you feel about Zach Bowman? He went to the Dolphins earlier.
Paul, he's your guy, man.
Yeah, I got along really.
I mean, the best year he had so far, in my opinion, was when 2009 when he was with Chicago. He had 6 interceptions.
I got along real well with Zach. A really good special teams player.
Good guy too,
and really good guy. And you know what though? From what I read, his comments when he signed with the Dolphins the other day is that they're going to give him a realistic chance to start.
Well, it's good for him.
Competition for him to actually get a starting role. Now, here, there's DRC and there's Prince. And those are your two starters.
He's not beating out one of those two guys.
There's no competition.
And he's not a slot corner. So he couldn't even fill that.
He's an outside guy.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I see if that was his overriding factor, then I get it. Okay, I totally get it. I would add this about Chucky Brown, if I may, just
please.
To go back for 1 second.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a spot in the sub-package for that, quote, third safety, dime package guy, extra corner slash guy who plays in that center field role. So even if Chucky Brown doesn't necessarily work out as a real safety, let's say starter per se, there's always a chance, John, he winds up playing that pseudo sub-package role as the dime back.
Yeah, and you know, Eshawn, there's one other guy in the secondary you should pay attention to, because I know the Giants loved what he did at the end of last year, and that's Mike Harris. He came in here, played a lot of slack corner, and they actually think he played pretty well in that role last year. Yeah. So that's somebody else to keep an eye on when camp opens. He's going to be competing with Tremaine McBride for that slot role. So a couple of guys to keep an eye on.
He's only a corner,
though. I actually like Tremaine McBride, to be honest with you.
Well, I think we all do. He got hurt, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, and he's coming off injury, and obviously he's got to prove that he's healthy and still can play at the level that we saw him play in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope he doesn't turn into a Ryan Mundy, in my opinion.
I'm not sure I get the correlation, but that's okay.
Thank you, Eshawn. Well, Ryan Mundy had some issues when he went to the Bears.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking corners, safety.
Not issues off the field.
Where's he going?
Bear fans had a lot of issues with their safety class last year.
Well, that's why they signed Trell.
Well, it was Mundy, and then I can't remember the other guy.
Mundy had a return for a touchdown against the Jets right here at MetLife Stadium, which was like his highlight of the year.
There's a Bear safety that's an absolute whipping boy.
For the
Chris Conti?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his name, right?
Yeah. For their message boards?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
He let me put it this way. He was on the same level as who's the guy that we brought in from Tennessee like 3 years ago that played safety and had issues? I'm trying to remember the kid's name. He had the locker right near the
Brown.
Yeah.
Brown.
What was his first name?
C.C. Brown.
C.C. Brown.
C.C. Brown. C.C. Brown.
He was on that level like C.C. Brown was with Giants.
That's tough. That's tough.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Phil in New Jersey. Phil, you're up next.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Phil. What's up, pal?
All right. How's your week going?
Everything's going all right, Phil.
I just had a question. So what do you think the direction with this first pick is going? Is it offensive lineman or is it defensive lineman? Like, I'm getting mixed, you know, reviews from everywhere. I check on this side, I check here, I listen to this, Mayock, Kuiper, it's all different. What are you guys' opinion?
Well, Phil, here's the beauty of it. The scouts aren't even all back in the building from their pro days and work yet to put the board together. So I don't think there's any way to say they're they're locked in the offensive line. They're locked in the defensive line. Heck, maybe it's a corner. Maybe it's a wide receiver. Maybe it's a linebacker. I mean, I think any of those spots that I just mentioned are possibilities based on the type of talent that's going to be on the board at nine. So, no, the team is not locked into anything. They're going to judge all the players that are there, regardless of position, and pick out the guy that they think for the next 10 years is going to be the best football player, and that's who they're going to take.
And if I may, I don't think anybody knows what the folks upstairs here at the Giants facility are going to do or which way they're even leaning. So what you're seeing, including from John and from me and everybody else, what you're seeing are, hey, if we were in the Giants' shoes, this is what we could see logically as a possible selection. That's how you have to approach it. It's strictly, I mean, when I'm talking to people about prospects, I'm giving you my opinion,
right,
what I see based on my experience, my knowledge, people I've talked to around the league. I'm not talking on behalf of Jerry
and
Reese.
Phil, I'm being completely honest with you. I'm a full-time employee for the Giants. I work here. I think I'm a valued member of the team. But they literally have the draft room under lock and key upstairs. Like, if I wanted to go up after the show and walk in the draft room and see what it looked like, I couldn't do it. I would literally get thrown out. So we might be here. I have no idea what they're thinking.
Because I feel like, you know, if the Giants could have went after one of the two tackles or could have got one of the two tackles that was a free agent, I think that we could have really got a bunch of steals in this draft, especially on defense. I feel like this. You can get a really, really, really good defensive player on the first, second, and third round.
Well, you know, here's the problem, though. One of those tackles in free agency, Phil, would have cost you a lot of money.
Where are you going to find the money
for that? Those guys ran you $8, $9 million per season.
Big bucks.
With significant guarantees.
I think we overplayed for a lot of the players that we got. I don't think they're that much of an impact player. Like, I like Vereen. I think that was a very good sign. I think we could have got him and a lineman and all those other guys, we could have, you know, filled that in the draft and got, you know, less contracts, like smaller contracts, guys. I think special teams players, you can find them a lot of places, you know?
Well, just remember one thing, Phil.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Appreciate it.
And you know, John, I think, you know, when you looked at the Giants as a whole, and I've tried to tell this to people, I think what they've done for the most part to this point are patch a lot of leaks. A lot of different leaks on the roster.
Which is what you're supposed to do in free agency.
And now you're trying to plug the holes in the draft.
All right.
I mean, that to me was the philosophy that they've used. And for the most part, that is usually the smartest one.
I appreciate it, Phil.
I don't disagree with what we did, you know, I just feel like that in this draft right here, I think we have to go get a tackle now. Instead of, you know, we can go after Danny Shelton or Shane Ray and then go get another tackle, a defensive tackle in the second round. But I just feel like our options are lesser now that we filled a bunch of holes and
I will say this. Let's say, theoretically, and I know Giant fans would probably have a revolt and Paul Dottino might actually die. The Giants do not pick an offensive lineman in the draft this year. Let's say they do not pick one offensive lineman the whole
year. Zero?
Way. In three days, they pick zero offensive linemen. Just like last year, they pick zero tight ends. So let's say that same thing happens this year on the offensive line, right? They still have some veterans out there in free agency. Now, they might not be big-name tackles now, but you can go out there, sign a Justin Blaylock, who started 2 or 3 years for the Falcons, has been a pretty solid NFL player. You leave Pugh out there at right tackle. There are still ways. Now, are you going to get some blue-chip top guy that's going to be a potential Pro Bowl player? You're not, but you can still get guys to fill in free agency, the guys that are left that can come in here and help the team. Phil, we got to run. Appreciate the call, man.
All right.
So would you survive if that happened?
That would be difficult. but I will say one thing about what John just said, and I can tell you this. A veteran NFL guy said to me, don't be surprised if over the next couple of months, even after the draft, that some other veterans do get cut free.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's that June 1st date too.
Though now you can designate guys as June 1st cut, so
you can.
June 1st isn't as big of a date as it used to be.
No, but there still can be some other guys pop free, and this was even expressed to me about the safety spot too.
Absolutely.
Don't think that it's totally done now. I mean, there are going to be other names that will pop up.
Not
at some
to mention
point.
Guys that'll pop up when they start making cuts in training camp. You obviously don't want to wait that long most of the time, but there are guys that could pop up then as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So in any event, there's still work to be done. The Giants know that. They're still working on it. It's not a finished product until week one, and even then it's not finished because there will be tweaks going on. One other thing that I did want to add, though, John, you were talking to him at the beginning of the conversation when, he was talking about special teams, and he kind of snuffed it off. If I can just throw this out there, special teams are still one-third of the game, and you and I both know Tom Coughlin values special teams immensely, and field position is a very, very, very big part and a big, big, strong point of emphasis in Tom Coughlin's game plans every week.
Oh, 100%.
So please, let's not
field.
Yeah, so let's not snuff off, you know, and Phil, I appreciate the call, but it sounded like you were kind of snuffing off special teams, like, oh, the Giants improved special teams. That's still a big deal.
Well, and the thing about Dwayne Harris, usually you bring in a guy helping special teams in one facet. Harris helps in literally every single team. Punt return, kick return, punt coverage, kick coverage. He does everything.
And he can
not
receive.
Not to mention, he was the fourth wide receiver for the Cowboys last year, and probably without so many weapons, he could be an effective third receiver, too. He was ahead of Cole Beasley on that depth chart for a while until Beasley, you know, came on and really started playing well. So, all right, let's get to our next guest. He covers the Louisville Cardinals. His name is Jeff Greer from the Courier-Journal. Jeff, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for joining us. How's it going down there in lovely Kentucky?
It's raining and pretty miserable right now, but everybody's getting ready for the Derby in a couple weeks, so I think people are in a good mood.
All right, maybe not so lovely, but Devontae Parker's gotten some lovely reviews from people looking at his game tape coming out in the draft. He's kind of settled in there as the third best receiver in the draft. He obviously had a slow start to the year. He missed those first, I think it was six games with that foot injury. But when he came back, even with, you know, a quote-unquote unsettled position at quarterback, Jeff, he really had one heck of a second half of the year, averaged nearly 150 receiving yards per game.
Yeah, I mean, he was... When he came back, that, you know, Louisville's offense before he was, you know, before he was healthy, looked really disjointed. I mean, you know, they looked confused at times. They didn't have a guy that they could really, and especially in the passing game, obviously in the passing game, they didn't have someone who they could kind of just say, okay, you know, it's third and seven or whatever, you know, we know who to throw to, or, you know, third down inside the red zone. They didn't have that, you know, jump ball guy that they could get to. You know, and so when he came back, they looked so much more cohesive. They had a lot more big play ability, and he really just kind of changed their offense and gave them a much-needed boost, you know, especially in games like Notre Dame. He was awesome against Florida State. He had a bunch of good games and really kind of changed the entire complexion of their offense once he came back.
Let me ask you, how did teams play him in terms of, you know, you got to see him every snap. I've only seen a bunch of cut-ups and highlights and so forth. Do you feel as though he took advantage of substandard corners a lot of times, or that he took advantage of off coverage, or that of sloppy man-to-man? Because a lot of times people will look at stats, and they can be very deceiving, because sometimes he's doing some big-time things against guys who maybe aren't so good on the other side of the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anytime you're playing, you know, Boston College or, you know, not to disparage those kids, but or Kentucky or schools like that, they're obviously not going to have, you know, the big time coverage guys that you might expect at other schools. But you know, Notre Dame tried to bracket him with, tried to kind of zone him a little bit, you know, and he still was able to wriggle free for a really nice touchdown catch there. He had 214 yards against Florida State, which, you know, to a lot of people, had
they
the best secondary in the country.
They can play.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I think it ultimately came down to, you know, there would be times where teams would focus their entire secondary on just trying to figure out a way to bracket him or just get him completely lost in coverage. And, you know, the thing that he did really well was he would keep going until he was open or until, you know, the quarterback found him. You know, he doesn't give up on plays, you know, if the quarterback looks, you know, in the other direction and then back toward him. So, you know, he kind of figured out a way to keep being productive, really, no matter who they were playing.
Final question on me about Parker, Jeff. you know, we know about his ability to get down the field. He stands almost 6'3", 6'2", and a half, 210 pounds. He can get deep. He's long. He's lanky. How is he in terms of being a consistent catcher in that short to medium intermediate range over the middle? Can he be that guy that can be a consistent possession guy for you over the middle, or do you think that's where he still needs to make that next step?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think right now, you know, if you were to ask me the one knock on him, that would be it, is that, and I've read that in quite a few places, too, in the evaluation of him now, is, you know, you still wonder, you know, he's got to be able to make more catches than he does. You know, and considering the production level that he already had in college, that sounds crazy to say, but there were a few times where he would drop passes or, you know, maybe be in situations that, you know, he might have ducked a second and dropped it. So, you know, I think that would be the biggest knock on him, if you can really find one on a top 15 pick in the draft. But I do think that, as he's shown in his growth here, or at least during his growth here at Louisville, was he does kind of catch up on things, and he can improve things. So I would say that is something that is certainly, you know, I'm sure on his radar that he needs to work on. But judging the way he, you know, kind of grew and everything else, I think, you know, he'll catch up on that too.
Let me go to defense for my final question. There's a perception, and it seems to be very true, the Giants are very thin at safety right now, at least going into the draft. There have been a lot of people calling this show, sending me things on Twitter and message boards, asking about Gerard Holloman, also James Sample, a couple of safety prospects out of Nebraska. What do you see from those guys that might make them enticing to draft? And specifically, how do you see them as free safeties or as strong safeties?
Well, Holloman tied the NCAA record for single-season interceptions. I think it was 14. You know, so he was able to kind of use his instincts, you know, and trust the tape study that he had done to really kind of know where the ball was going in certain situations and go get it. But the flip side is he wasn't all that physical. He really didn't help much on the run. You know, a lot of times he would try to go in for, you know, kind of that game-changing big hit that everybody talks about, he would whiff. So, you know, I think part of that was his health, but part of that was, you know, I just don't know how physical of a safety prospect he can be in the NFL. I would think that you would want him to just be sort of a free safety type who can, you know, sort of in that Troy Polamalu blend where, you know, you can expect some big plays, but there's going to be times, as we saw with Troy, as his career developed and he got older, he missed a lot too. So Sample, I think, is a better prospect. I think he's built better. He's a better tackler. I'm pretty sure by the end of the year he led the team in tackling. You know, he's not as big of an interception guy, but he can definitely help on the run and can really be a guy who can influence the defense. So if it were me and I were an NFL GM, I would look strongly at Sample as sort of a mid-to-late round guy who might be able to help.
All right, I got another question about one of your guys coming out on the defensive side of the ball. I think Charles Gaines is an interesting prospect. He's about 5'9", 5'10", 180 pounds, a converted wide receiver. He has good ball skills, still a little raw at corner, but he seems to me to really project as that good physical, aggressive slot corner to match up inside against some of those smaller and quicker NFL receivers.
Yeah, I mean, he is blazing fast. It was funny that, you know, I was still relatively new to the job when I first saw him. We asked him how fast he was, and he claimed that he runs with animals. he's a really interesting cat, very, very funny. So, you know, his speed is something that I think, yeah, I mean, you guys saw at the combine, just how quick and fast he is. You know, I think that's the type of thing where you could fit him in somewhere, yeah, and really, you know, kind of keep molding him. He's only played corner, I think, for 2 years. He was a receiver at a high school.
Yep.
They converted him. So, you know, for him to make that progress, I think, you know, I think he's certainly capable of becoming a pretty reliable NFL guy. But he kind of, you know, this past season, you know, he was the number one corner and teams just threw away from him. So his stats didn't quite live up to what they were the year before. But he's a pretty capable guy too, I would say.
Final question. I just want to ask you quick about a couple of guys on defense in the front seven that could go in the middle rounds here. One is Lorenzo Maldon, outside linebacker, 6'4", 260. Then you got B.J. Dubow, 6'4", 284 on the defensive line. What can you tell us about those two guys real quick, Jeff?
Yeah, Maldon is a relentless pass rusher. He's a really great story off the field. So I think he's the type of guy who could be kind of a late addition and, would really give a team some solid depth. DeBose is a little bit of a sleeper to me. He's a real physical guy, but was kind of overshadowed by some of the other more talented players that they had on that team. I think he could be a good edge rush type guy too. So those are two guys that I'm very interested to see where they end up because I think they could, be pretty reliable backups and maybe someday morph into maybe some starting positions for them. But they're both pretty good guys.
You mentioned Maldon's story off the field. Would love to hear it. What do you got?
Well, he bounced around from foster homes. He had his offer pulled from South Carolina after he was, I think, on signing day or something like that.
Wow.
That kid has been through a lot. And for him to, he came to Louisville and Charlie Strong was sort of that fatherly figure for him. And he became a big time fan favorite here and dealing with the media was always very courteous and very interesting. So he's a guy who I think teams will fall in love with in interviews and really like to add him as sort of a depth guy. Who could he's not going to get in trouble. He's going to be a good guy to add to your roster as a young player.
Appreciate it. Hey, thanks for the time, Jeff. We learned some good stuff. Thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you down the road, all right?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. That's Jeff Greer, covers the Louisville Cardinals for the Courier-Journal. And I got a little stuff on Maldon here, just a couple things that are interesting. Let's see. He entered the foster family system at the age of 2, along with his 4 siblings. His mom and dad were in and out of jail over the course of his lifetime. Played organized football for the first time as a sophomore in high school. Signed with South Carolina. But low test scores forced South Carolina to move on, and he committed to Louisville shortly thereafter after everybody took the SAT. So sounds like he's been through a lot. And I've seen him in projected late second round, third round. He's one of Paul's favorite guys, the tweener pass rusher guys. He played DN for 3 years, and he played outside linebacker his final year at Louisville. Paul loves those guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The thing that struck me, and I just can't get it out of my mind, in over 30 years of being in this business, I've never heard a player say he runs with animals. I've never heard that before.
It's great. I didn't know much about him. I was reading about him yesterday getting ready for this interview, and he's an interesting prospect. He's about 5'9". He's 215, so he's 180. He's physical, and he's a guy that, they talk about the ability for corners to mirror wide receivers, right, mirror their movements, and especially in the slot, that's important because you can have inside-outside releases. You can go either direction. To me, he's the type of guy that can fit in as a slot corner in the middle rounds of the draft.
At some point during my note-taking on him, I had looked at him, John, because I thought it was a very interesting prospect. I wrote down that he's going to need work, though, because he's raw.
Absolutely.
And so he's the kind of guy who you take late in the third day and you say, well, wait a minute now. We're not going to put too much pressure on you. We're just going to coach you up, polish you up, and maybe we got something really special here in a year or two down the road. But you got to be patient with a guy like that. You don't draft him right away and say he's going to give us an immediate impact in the rotation. Maybe you get help out of special teams at the beginning. Maybe he doesn't even get a shirt. When you're 53 on Sunday, maybe he's inactive.
Yeah, it might take till midseason his first year, maybe his second year to really, put him as a full-time player. Or, some guys catch on quick, too. So
very intriguing, though. I agree with you.
I think it's very interesting. All right, we got 15 minutes. We got your calls at 201-939-4513. Vic in Florida has been holding very patiently. Vic, appreciate you holding. What's up?
No problem. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Vic.
The other day I called and I asked or said the 4 areas of concern that the Giants should concentrate on, and that's, again, offensive line, defensive line, safety, and linebacker. Somebody on Twitter said, well, I call in every other day and ask about the same damn thing all the time. Well, they're talking about receivers, they're talking about tight ends, they're talking about this and that, but they don't talk about what we really need. I've been following the Giants for 50 years, and I know what they need. I think if, let's say, Brandon Scherff is not available, what do you think, Paul, of Andrus Peat?
I'm not a big proponent on Andrews Pete. I've talked to some people who know personnel who believe he is strictly going to be a tackle. He's not a guy who you could possibly move around. So versatility is a strike against him, at least if you subscribe to those beliefs and what you see on tape. I also believe, to me, he's more of a finesse tackle, a technique tackle, if you will, rather than a mauler.
Right.
Okay. Now, I had somebody say to me, somebody who I respect, said, you know what? Pete probably doesn't have the quicks off the snap to deal with speed rushers off the edge at left tackle. I think he's going to have to bulk up a bit and try to be a right tackle.
Well, he might. At 6'7", he's a guy that isn't necessarily going to block speed rushers with its quickness. He's the guy that's going to want to get his long arms on you and then use that length
technique
to keep you out of the court. Right.
He's a technique guy.
But he has to get better at that to be a technique guy at left tackle.
So
absolutely.
You know, look, even this gentleman who told this to me said he's not a first-round pick in my book. He's a second-round pick. But, heck, a second-round pick is better than I was when I was coming out of college.
and I've seen, and Vic, I've seen most people have Pete right now as a pick in the early 20s, sometimes slipping into the second round, but he's usually a late second half of the first round type of pick,
right,
based on a lot of the
right
mock drafts I've seen.
What about a guy like Lael Collins? Would you take him if Sheriff wasn't around?
I would very strongly consider him, but I would think, based on what I've looked at, you know, he to me is the second offensive lineman on my board. And I think at 9 is a little high because you probably have other players in the cluster with value higher than Collins, I would think, at that spot, John. That's my
right
issue.
I agree.
Taking him at 9 is probably a little high. If you move down a little bit, I'd have no trouble taking Collins.
I think Collins is going to be a very solid offensive lineman day one he walks into the NFL. He's tough. He's physical.
No
he's
doubt.
Got a mean streak. We talked to a guy from LSU earlier in the week.
That's right, you
and
did.
He said a lot. He basically said exactly what you just said. He's a big guy. Wonders if he's a left tackle in the league. Probably thinks he's more of a right tackle.
I think he's a right tackle.
Very physical, work ethic, blue collar, mean streak. Great guy off the field, but he said when he puts the helmet on, he's a different guy on the field, which is exactly what you're looking for. Vic, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513.
Positive value, John, in that I do think enough of people believe he can be a tackle or a guard in the NFL. And that, again, that versatility component always adds value for me.
I talked to a couple of, that I will remain nameless for now, a couple of former Giants offensive linemen yesterday.
Okay.
And both raved to me. I didn't ask them to rave. I asked them their general opinion on the offensive line class in this year's draft.
Right.
Both guys said to me, far and away, not even close, Sheriff's a stud and he's better than anybody else and it's not even a contest. Especially technique-wise. They goes, in terms of being a polished offensive lineman that brings the type of attitude you want, he's far and away the best offensive lineman on the board. And it's not close.
I didn't need confirmation.
I know you didn't, but some people out there might. Some people out there might.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
201-939-4513. I think Ronald is up next. Where's Ronald calling from? Do we know, Greg? Ronald, where are you at? How are you?
I'm in Georgia, man. What's going on?
Hey, Ronald, what's up, man?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Paul? I've been a Sheriff guy for the longest. But I went to thinking, the two spots on the team that have been injured the most have been quarterback and offensive line. I don't know if y'all would agree. And my thing is, you went and got Brett Jones from the CFL, who I think would probably be all right playing guard.
Okay.
You got Mukamara's contract about to be up. DRC playing injured, and then everybody up under them getting injured on a yearly basis, what it seems like. What do you think about a guy like Trey Waynes at 9 if he's there over a lineman?
It's not up yet, Paul. Don't say it. No, you know what? Hey, look.
He is seriously in my cluster. How about that, John?
I think Trey Waynes, I got to be on Ronald. I've said this before. Me and Paul said this 3 weeks ago before he started going up on other people's boards.
We did.
I think Trey Waynes is by far the best corner in the draft. I think he's a full tier above the other corners on the board. To me, whenever you judge these players, the way I like to go about it is I like to say, all right, what's the biggest hole in this guy's game that other teams can exploit? Because when you line up and you're an opposing team, you look at this guy on tape and you say, oh boy, well, he can't do A, B, and C. We can take advantage of him in that way. I look at Waynes, I do not see a big hole in his game. He's long. He reads the ball in the air well. He's aggressive. He can play press coverage. He can play off coverage if he has to as well, though he's much more comfortable up at the line of scrimmage. I think Waynes will step in and be an excellent cornerback the day he steps on the field. I think he's a four-year senior, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's an excellent player. So I think he will definitely be in the mix and in the conversation if he's there when the Giants pick at 9, because, look, the Falcons have struggled on defense. Their secondary was a sieve last year. I could see them considering him at number 8 when they get up and pick 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was kind of thinking, like, when you get to the Falcons, they got offensive line trouble, they got defensive trouble. So it's a chance that they might take a share.
I think if I'm the Falcons, I'm strongly looking at a pass rusher. They really need a pass rush. That's kind of what – well, I'm hoping that's where they go. But, yeah, that's where I think they probably should go. Here's the deal, okay? And, again, we go over this every spring. The Giants try to put a cluster – and I call it a cluster. They call it a grouping of 5 or 6 players that they believe have the value at their corresponding pick. And the hope is that by the time their pick comes up, at least 2 or 3 of those guys are still available. That's how it works. I put together my cluster, and Waynes is in my cluster. So that's about the best I can do for you. I put together my cluster for the Giants, and he's in there.
I appreciate your time, man.
Thanks,
you too.
All right, Paul. You know, I could have been really mean to you when I set up the mock draft for it, but I'm going to do it now. All right?
No, you already were. You took Sheriff off the board.
Well,
you were terribly mean.
Well, I could have taken the other guy off the board, too. So here's what we're going to do.
What?
Sheriff goes to the Jets at 6. Waynes goes to the Falcons at 8. Okay? They're off the board. Williams is off the board. Fowler's off the board. White's off the board. Cooper's off the board. And the 2 quarterbacks. So that puts the Giants at 9. Your choices. Actually, you know what? I'm going to leave 1 quarterback on the board, and Beasley's off the board too, so he's gone too. So your choices. It's not out of the question. So your choices now at number 9. You got Randy Gregory. You got Shane Ray. You got Devontae Parker. You have your boy Lael Collins. The defensive tackles are still on the board. Malcolm Brown, Danny Shelton.
Yeah.
All right, what do you think?
Right there?
Yeah.
And I'm not copping out on you. I'm very serious.
Trade back?
I'm really trying to trade down. I really am.
You can't. You make all the calls, you can't trade down. Who do you pick?
Oh, boy.
See, I like putting Paul in these situations. It stresses him out.
It's stressful for me. This is very stressful for me.
It could happen. You got to be prepared for every potential.
I know. I know.
So be prepared.
8 hand grenades at once is what you just thrown at me?
I did. I could have had both quarterbacks still on the board. I at least had 1 goal.
Wow. We got a couple minutes left. Let me think.
All right, fine. All right, guys, we only got 7 minutes. We got a bunch of calls to get through, so we're going to have to be pretty quick on these calls. So let's get to them. Izzy in the Bronx is up next. Izzy, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Izzy, what's up?
Hi.
I'm good. I got just a question.
Bring it.
I think first before my question, with the emergence of Odell, I think the Giants last year's draft class kind of got overshadowed. I think they had a good draft.
Absolutely.
My question is, how many picks in this draft do you think have to be impact players for the Giants to bounce back? And my second question is, because, John, you were a good research guy, so I got a question for you.
Okay.
What's the average that teams make of their draft classes? The players impact on a team. Thank you for calling. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, Izzy, here's the problem. I don't know how to, you know, turn that into a workable number.
I wouldn't know either.
It's hard. I mean, we're talking game starter. We're talking Pro Bowls. We're talking All-Pro selections. And are you talking after 1 year, 2 years? Are you talking after 3 or 4 years? I mean, I think if you have a good draft class, and I have very good draft class. If you have 3 guys being everyday contributors to your team, every week contributors, I think that's a pretty darn good draft class. And that's what the Giants had last year with Richburg, Beckham, and Andre Williams being, you know, pretty much every week contributors to the team. So that's how I look, and I agree. I think last year with Beckham's superstardom Guys like Richburg, overlooked. Andre Williams, maybe a little bit overlooked. Devon Kennard, overlooked. And that's the fourth guy for the Giants last year. I don't know, I forgot about him. So they had a very good draft class last year, and they're going to try to do the same when they pick in 2015.
Don't forget Burhe, because he might wind up being very productive
right.
this year.
Burhe, very good on special teams last year, and he could step in on defense this year. All right, let's go to
– Did you want my guy now?
You have it?
I'm going to take Shelton. If you're taking all
you're
those
taking
other guys, if you're taking all
okay.
those guys away from me, I'm going to take Shelton.
I think that's a very solid pick.
That's what I got to do. Well, based on what you left me.
I was wondering if you were going to take Shelton over Collins or not.
Oh, no, because rule number one, never let need push you so far that you knock guys up several notches on the board. Again, that's what happened with Cedric Jones, and look how that worked out.
Three calls. Let's do it. Joe in Florida's up next. Joe?
Hi, John. And Paul,
hi,
how
Joe.
You doing?
Good to see. Good to talk to you.
My concern is when I first turned you on today, I thought the first thing you'd be talking about is the free agents' pickups from yesterday. I'd like to hear your comments. I'll take it offline. Thanks. Bye bye.
All right, appreciate it.
You're talking about Gordy and James, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're back of the depth chart guys. You know, honestly.
Jones. It's Jones.
I'm sorry. Back at the depth chart, guys. Jones had a cup of coffee with the Ravens. Hasn't played a lot of football lately. And Gordy was with the Colts, but prior to that, some years ago, when Spags was head coach of the Rams, he played half a season as a starter.
Started
when he was with the Rams.
Six games,
games. And so Spags knows him. And then there was the change in the coaching staff. Jeff Fisher came in. Jeff Fisher decided, I guess for whatever reason, that he wasn't good enough to be on the depth chart, and they wound up cutting him. And then subsequent to that, he was with the Colts last year. They're depth chart guys. They're veterans who have at least had a taste of the NFL. They compete in camp for a spot on the 53. That's
exactly
all there is to
what's
it.
Going to be. They're going to have to be contributors on special teams. They're going to have to do all that type of stuff that you want out of veterans. And, you know, that's the type of guy that will, you know, they play different positions. But, you know, Gordy's a Bowman type of guy. He's going to step in. He can play if you need him, but he's going to be a good special teamer. And that's what you use him for.
The funny thing is, John, I would say this, and I'm not speaking about him specifically, but let's just say player X. Sometimes player X comes onto your team as someone who was a virtual unknown or a journeyman type from somebody else, and suddenly he gets to your team and he shows a little something more maybe than what he showed the first time around.
Hey, maybe
Josh, the coaching staff meshes with him better.
Maybe Josh Gordy could be the next reincarnation of James Butler. Maybe that's why Steve Spagnuolo wanted him for when he played for him in St.
You
Louis.
Know?
He could be. You know, people weren't lining up to sign James Butler. So he could step in and fill that type of role. You never know. Get these guys in camp, let them compete, see what they can do. And if they're good enough, they're on a roll, and maybe a big role. Who knows?
I think a great example of that's Tremaine McBride, you know.
Six-year pro out of football for a year. Came here and
played.
I don't know.
Right? No disrespect, but I don't think anybody was banging his doors down to get him, and the Giants pick him up as a free agent signing. I think people are looking at him as a line in transactions. They're not even thinking about him as a contributor. And look what happens. He fits in well here with the system, and he becomes an important part when he was healthy with his team.
Yeah, we certainly didn't want to short sell those two signings. That was not our intention, but we have so much draft stuff going on. We had the guest book, so we kind of wanted to get into that right off the show. But, Joe, thank you for calling in and asking about it. Let's go to Derek in Philly. Derek's up next on line four. What's up, D?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, Derek.
Hi, Josh. Hi, Paul. Listen, you know, I've been hearing a lot of talk about, you know, the offensive line, and it just sounds like, I mean, it's like, I guess that's why we fans, because it seems like they're reaching. You know what I mean? Like, I really don't feel like at number nine, value meets need for any of those offensive lines.
Well, see,
really?
Derek, here's the thing. On almost every big board I've seen, Brandon Scherff is in the top eight.
I really think he's a top 10 value, honestly. I'm not doing this just because I'm old school and I love linemen. That's not what this is about.
But Derek, right now, just give you an example. I got Dane Brugler, who we had on a couple weeks ago. This is his big draft guy here that I have in front of me. He has Brandon Scherff as his fourth greatest player on his board.
Fourth overall.
Number four overall.
Whew.
Well, he must on his way that, you know, can be a very special player. But what I was thinking is, like, you know, especially, you know, with the team that we got together, it's like the offensive line, it's like it could possibly already be there, and we could just be in a position to add depth and, you know, just go along with how we usually would go along in a draft by taking the best player available. I really think that we're in a lot better shape than, you know, what people think.
Well, Derek, let me ask you this, though. Paul and I aren't advocating picking an offensive lineman because of a need. We're advocating picking the offensive lineman because we think he's the most talented guy that could be on the board at number 9.
Oh, I've sold you on Sheriff as the guy?
Not yet.
I was hoping.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He's really that good. You know, if he dropped to us, I don't think nobody else will. I think we'll be able to get him.
Well, Derek, let me ask you this real quick. Let's say you get to number 8, all right? Or you get to number 9. I'm not giving you Amari Cooper or Kevin White. They're off the board, okay? I'm not giving you Dante Fowler. I'm not giving you Leonard Williams. Go past that group of guys. I'm taking Vic Beasley off the board for you, too. He's also gone. Who do you like better that's available than Brandon Scherff?
Well, when you say better, I mean, I guess nobody now that you think about it. I mean, if he can actually be as good as somebody would think that he would go to possibly a 4th overall, I mean, you can mention Trey Waynes in that top 10.
Now, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. If Scherff and Trey Waynes are on the board, Derek, and the Giants pick Trey Waynes, I'm not going to sit here and moan and cry about it. I have those guys almost on the same exact level in terms of talent. I think they're almost equal. I think both of them are that good.
Yeah, I would say this.
They are, and I'm rooting for us really to steal something. You know, something that's
you want to steal something.
Top 5, top 4, and he can somehow slip to that 9.
They stole a guy named Beckham last year.
And they stole a guy named Prince back in 2011.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for taking my call. Have a good one.
Now, Derek, no problem. We appreciate the call. Look, guys, we're not telling you this is one and done. This is who the Giants are taking, and we're not telling you that. I haven't even figured out exactly what my top 10 is yet. I'll come up with that over the next week or so. Maybe tomorrow, maybe early next week, I'll have those numbers for you.
The NFL folks who put up their almost weekly mock draft.
Yeah, almost daily.
Oh, yeah. They're 8 experts who wind up picking. None of them have Scherff going past 11. He is the lowest spot.
He's a top 10 player.
And that's 8 guys on NFL.com. Nobody has him lower than 11. So it's pretty unanimous that he's a top 10 guy.
And look, if the Giants played a 3-4 defense and they got there at 9, and I have a chance to take a Shane Ray maybe or a Gregory, then we're having a different conversation.
Can't do that.
Then we're having an absolutely different conversation. Vic Beasley, he's in the conversation too. We can have that talk. But at 4-3... just not sure those guys fit unless, again, the Giants will make this determination, and they know far better than Paul and I if those guys can make that type of conversion to 4-3 D-end or 4-3 linebacker, depending on what type of size you want the guy to play, what position.
Right.
Final call of the show. I know we're a little bit over, but wanted to get you all in. Let's go to J.D. in North Carolina next. J.D., what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for fitting me in.
No problem, J.D.
Being on the Scherff conversation, I'm definitely on board with Paul. I've got about the same projection as he has. I think that's the important thing when you're looking at him, is that if you believe that he's going to be a right tackle, that is a huge upside for the Giants this season, because what you're essentially going to get is an upgrade at 2 positions.
Right.
I know Paul has definitely talked about this in the past, where Scherff is a guy that can come in and start right tackle from day one. You slide Pugh over to left guard, and now with one draft pick, you've completely upgraded your entire O-line from something that might have been serviceable to what could be the top 10, top 5 O-line. And that is going to be a huge, huge benefit, not just for the running game, but for the passing game and the team overall. And I really don't see another pick that's going to have that kind of impact from day one that you can pick up with the number 9 pick. I want to get you guys' thoughts on that. And thanks again for taking the call.
Appreciate it.
You know, at 9, you figure you're getting a blue-chip player. You're getting a guy who's going to start right away. But the word impact is really what stands out there, John. You want a guy who's not just going to be able to start, but you want him to be somewhat of a difference maker, if at all possible. And, you know, I can't say enough about Scherff in that spot. I would say this. I do think that if he's gone, Waynes,
and he could be. Look, there's a really good chance that Scherff goes to the Jets. There's a really good chance Scherff goes to the Falcons. He could very well be off the board. He's an excellent, excellent football player.
You know, we've even heard from the Iowa radio guy last week that he heard the Bears in connection to him. So here's what I would say. You know, you look at your four cornerstones. Again, old school. Quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, and cover corner. Those are your four cornerstones. Those are your four impact positions based on old school football 101. So I can't knock Waynes. If Scherff is gone and they can't get that guy and Waynes is available and they pick him, John, we've talked about this now for a month. Like you said, before most people had him moving up the board. How could you cry about a cover corner? How? You can't. There's impact right there because he's going to get on the field, even if he's only the nickel, 60% of the time.
And again, we're talking about need here, folks. It's all a matter of how the Giants front office ends up evaluating these guys. They don't have their board done yet. They'll be working on the next couple of weeks. Obviously, they have ideas. They've watched all these players. But now's the time, and I think it's starting this weekend, actually, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about that. Don't quote me on that, by the way. I'm not positive. That everyone comes together, all the scouts, all the personnel guys on the pro personnel side, the coaching staff, the college scouts, Jerry Reese, Mark Ross, Kevin Abrams, everybody gets together and they start to kind of fit all their different opinions together and it goes on the board. Obviously, Jerry Reese has the final say. He's the general manager. That's his job. Mark Ross has a huge voice. And where they go, though, for information on the individual guys are the scouts. Because these scouts have seen him in person a number of times. They've talked to a million people, not the kid himself now, but the people around him. They probably talked to the kid at the combine or they brought him when they bring him in for a visit here. The scouts usually here for that too, from what I understand. And they figure out exactly what they have in each one of these kids. So until the Giants make those determinations on where they value these guys, we don't know who they're going to pick. You know, maybe they don't have Sheriff valued as high as Paul and I do right now, and they don't pick him. Who knows? We'll find out, and nothing's wrong with that. The Giants are trained to do this, and they're going to make the best decision.
Final short remark, just remember, whatever you read in the papers about guys who have come in for individual visits, that doesn't automatically mean he's going to get picked. Because in many years, especially in the last decade, the Giants have picked guys who they did not bring in for individual visits.
Aaron Ross.
He was a good example.
I think Prince Mukamira was not Prince here had for not come here either. Visit.
That's correct.
Individual visit.
So that doesn't necessarily tell you anything. So don't read that and say, oh, I think the Giants are going to pick him. Don't do that. That doesn't work.
Everybody, great job. Tomorrow, Lance and I will be joined by Matt Miller, draft expert from Bleacher Report. We'll talk about the draft with him, see his latest rumblings on what's going on. And then I've already talked to a bunch of folks. We're going to have Rob Rang the Monday before the draft. We're going to have a couple of draft experts on next week. Tony Pauline will join us at some point. We're going to have one of the guys from Our Lads come on the week before the draft, or the week of the draft, rather. So Rick Saratella will join us again.
We're busy.
So we got a lot of good guests coming up the next week and a half as we start getting into the nitty-gritty as the Giants begin to decide what they're going to do in the 2020 draft. Make sure you stay tuned to Big Blue Kickoff Live for all the great calls and information. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Enjoy the lovely day of weather here in the tri-state area, everybody.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch.